the Wildcat. You're going to hear news and interviews from the world of drag racing, both now and then. So get yourself situated, pull your belts tight, grab your favorite beverage, and get ready for some racing and rocking.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to Racing and Rocking with DragList.com, produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. I'm Bill Pratt. It's great to be with you tonight because tonight we feature one of the most amazing feats in modern drag racing, our 2017 NHRA and Lucas Oil Drag Racing Series double champion in stock and super stock, Justin Lamb. Justin, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
Man, so excited to have you on there. Now, I'm going to deconstruct all that stuff I just said for the folks who didn't catch you in National Dragster. You won the 2017 NHRA Stock Eliminator Championship, the 2017 NHRA Super Stock Eliminator Championship, and you won both of those titles in Division 7 on the Lucas Oil Drag Racing Series. Tell us about that amazing season.
It really is unbelievable. I think even at this point, it's still, I'm not even sure it's totally sunk in, but it's so hard in NHRA to win. I don't know how many listeners like follow sportsman racing, but it's very hard to win one championship. Like, if you told me, whatever, in the next 5 years you're going to win one world championship, I'm going to be really happy with that. Like, that's really hard to do, and I think it would be really cool to even fathom winning two in one season is almost just unbelievable.
It's amazing, and you're absolutely right, guys. You know, really, really great racers race on the pro and sportsman side for years and years, and maybe come away with a Vision Championship, and they're happy with that, and maybe come away with some national event wins, right? But to quadruple up in 1 year, and we were talking just before the show, we really have to check that out to see if that's ever happened before, because as we were saying, you know, there are two occurrences before where folks have won two championships in 1 year, and perhaps they won their divisions at the same time, but we don't really know that. We have to get old Bob Fry to chase us down, or maybe Lewis Bloom, the stat guy. Lewis will take care of us, but Bob's always asking us for something to research in his retirement. Maybe we'll send him off after this one. So that would be cool.
It would definitely be interesting. I would assume that if the gentleman that won the national championships in the past, to get enough points, they more than likely won the division also. But, you know, it's hard to say if they raced more out of division or something like that. So I think this year, actually, if I remember correctly, like the gentleman that won the top sportsman national championship did not win the division, which just caught my attention because I don't think that happens very often. I think it typically goes hand in hand, but so you never know. I guess it'd definitely be worth doing the research.
Right. Oh, so amazing though. So let's talk about it a little bit. So you have a Cobalt Superstock, or Super Stock, right? And then a Copo Camaro is the stock car. I mean, it seems like, I mean, I'd be interested to know, is the stock car faster than the Super Stock?
No, the Super Stocker is definitely faster. It runs in the 840 to 850 range. And okay, the Copo runs 940s to 950s. So they're about a second apart. And, basically the Cobalt I've had for years. I've had the Cobalt, I think we got in 2008 or 9, probably 2009. And I've raced it quite a few seasons, and it's actually what I won a championship in 2 years ago in 2015. And we just got the Copo. Believe it or not, we started the season in, I have a 1970 split bumper Camaro.
Right.
That I always raced in stock eliminator. I won the world championship in 2013 in that car. And I started the season with it, raced it through April, and then we got the Copo, and we started racing it in May. And that's one thing about the stock eliminator championship. It wasn't even on the radar. We decided to purchase the new car. My father purchased the new car. And the whole goal of the season, essentially, with that car was to try to just get it where I'm comfortable, basically. Get it the way I like it, running the way I like it, learn how to dial it in, learn how to drive it well, things like that. And that was kind of the goal. And, you know, who would have thought switching cars mid-season, then you'd even have a chance to win a championship.
Right.
It just so happened that it was a quick learning curve, and we had success right away, and it worked out, obviously. And on the flip side of that, in Superstock, the goal was from the start of the season was to definitely try to win a championship. And my racing partner and I, Kyle Seipel, I'm assuming you guys are familiar, but he drives my dragsters, and that was kind of our goal was I wanted to try to win Superstock, he wanted to try to win Top Dragster. That's what we were going to focus on. You know, especially with stock, just kind of the car switches. I mean, that's a huge wholesale change, and I would have never expected to have the success as quick as we did. So.
It's amazing. Yeah, Kyle had a great year too in the dragsters. It didn't yank a championship, but he came darn close. And
yeah,
you guys are tearing it up.
He had a great season, and whatever between him and I, it's really, really cool partnership. He's one of my best friends, and us racing together, like, forget the friendship, we race very well together, and he had as much to do with me winning my championships as I did. I really believe that, like, without his support, definitely wouldn't have won it. So he had a great season himself, but he had a great season as part of mine. Like, he's just as much as part of mine as anything. So
awesome.
It's pretty cool.
It is a team sport. People don't think so if they are looking on the outside in, but it absolutely is. So, but I'm glad you brought up the Stock World Championship in 2013 and the Super Stock World Championship in 2015, because indeed you nailed those things down. And, you know, so, man, I'm telling you about incredible, incredible success. Well, tell us a little bit how hard it was to compete in both cars. Are they significantly different? Was it difficult to get, like, you know, from one to the other when elimination started running, or did you run them at the same time?
You know, it can be difficult at times, but in general, from the time I made the step from junior dragsters to full-size cars, I've raced two cars pretty much all but 1 year. My father's always given me the opportunity to have two cars, so I'm very used to driving two different cars, and they are very different. You know, you've got, like, the Cobalt is a carbureted 358 modified car, low to the ground, big hood scoop in your face, like, that's one end of the spectrum. And then you have, you know, the 70 Camaro, that's a 50-year-old carbureted 350 that you set up like a regular car. And then you go to the Copo that is like the ultra modern, brand new, you know, fuel injected. They definitely are very different. But that being said, the fact that I've always raced two different cars, I mean, in the past, I even raced two different kinds of trees. You know, like, I would race Pro Tree and Super Comp or Super Gas, and
right,
Full Tree and Super Stock. I've just learned over the years to differentiate. Like, you know, okay, you're in this car now, you know, like, and you don't think about it, you just subconsciously do it. And I think it just comes from years of doing it, you know. And there's a lot of guys that are the same way. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of people that race multiple cars and that are good in multiple cars. So,
sure,
it's probably not. I mean, they are very different, but it's probably not as difficult as you think when you've done it. I mean, keep in mind, I'm 30 years old. I've been racing full size cars for half my life now, and
right,
racing in general for three quarters of my life. So it's
right,
kind of just get used to it a little bit, you know.
You know, I have to say it once, I keep saying it over and over again. I was there at the beginning of Junior Dragsters and announced them a long time. And you know, Junior Dragster racers, when you're that young and it gets ingrained in you, I mean, it's something that you know, it's not easy, of course. It's never easy. You still got to concentrate. But, man, it's hard to beat that when you learn it for so many years and it's just kind of part of your DNA.
Yeah, the Junior Dragster program really is... I think it's really a good thing for learning how to race, but also a good thing to do as a kid. You know, my son, he's 4 years old now, and another year he can drive a junior dragster, and he already wants one, of course. And, you know, when we first decided to have kids, my wife and I, we thought, well, maybe we'll have him do, like, sports or something. But you know what? He loves cars, and it really is, like, you know, I've made so many lifelong friends from day one in junior dragsters to now, you know, you learn so much, and I really think it's a great sport. And obviously, if you can translate that into full-size car, there's so many people that have done it, like from Sean Langdon down, basically, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously
right,
the one that's
Eric
done the
Anderson.
Most and gone to... Yeah, Erica, you know, they've both gone on to win Mellow Yellow Championships, and there's a whole bunch between, you know, them and I. So there's a lot of...
Sure.
It's funny, like, people I still... I race junior dragsters with today... like Ryan Mangus, Kyle Rizzoli, like a lot of guys out here that we've been right. racing together 20 plus years, you know.
Right. And see, us old guys remember all the dads and uncles. I mean, Rizzoli forever and the disciples forever, you know. I mean, we and Lambs yep. forever, you know. I mean, you know, it's yep. it's fun. It's a great sport for that. Well, tell yeah. us about like the season when you obviously shifted cars in the middle of the season on the stock side. But when did it start to look like you may have this thing? You know, obviously that was your goal, certainly in the Cobalt. But then things did kind of come your way at some point in the season. How did the season come together in points for both cars?
Well, both very different. The Cobalt, we started off good. We won the Winter Nationals. Had a decent point total going in general early with that car, and then we went on basically our Western swing. We skipped Denver, but we went to the Sonoma Divisional, Sonoma National, Seattle National, Seattle Divisional, and so bottom line, in those four races, and then we'll add one more race, let's call it five races. We went to the Woodburn Divisional in Division 6, so we went to five races in a row, like five races in maybe like 7 or 8 weeks, and I went to the final round in the Cobalt in all five. So I won three and runner up two, which by the time I left Woodburn, I had like 690-something points. And at that point, I mean, it doesn't lock it up by any means, but we had a really – like if you have 600 – when I won the world in 2015, I believe I had somewhere around 640. Well, I had 690 here at like the end of September, you know, beginning of September, I think. So that car, it was really pretty early. Stock – we had a good point total going. It very similar. I went to the Phoenix Divisional. I runnered up. I think that was at the Phoenix National, the Phoenix Divisional. I think I went to the semis. Go to Sonoma, same thing. We went to like the semis, maybe two finals in a row, had pretty good points. But that being said, a gentleman named Kevin Helms was leading stock all year and had a lot more. I mean, he was at, I think by the time we both went into the Vegas National at the end of the year, I was around 600, maybe 610 points, and he was at 650. Mm-hmm. And we both were still, he had one more race to claim, I had three. And so, to jump forward, Vegas Nationals when I took over the points lead, but coming into that weekend, I really wholeheartedly felt that Kevin Helms is an unbelievable racer. He's going to gain some points. He was bettering a second round, so as soon as he wins second round, he's going to start increasing. And he's very more than capable of doing that. And it just so happened he had a first-round loss. And it wasn't until that point that I really looked and thought, wow, I've got the next three races to claim with the Vegas National, Pomona National, and the Vegas Divisional. And I basically needed to improve by five rounds to win. And I had three races to do so, which is much easier said than done. But at least I had a real shot because I was going in thinking he's going to gain at least 30 or 40 more points, and I'm going to have to win two races to even have a chance. And the bottom line is, with the first round loss, I had to get to the finals to pass him. I ultimately won the race, and that was it. So the Cobalt, I felt like, you know, July, August, September, we really thought we had a great chance, and I really didn't think I had a great chance till Saturday morning of the Vegas National. So it's crazy how they both shape up so different, but ultimately it worked.
Yeah, tough deal for him, but that's racing. You know, it's so tough. And but for you, that's a great place to do it because you're out of Henderson yourself, right? That's pretty much your home track as far as you're concerned.
Yes, Vegas would definitely be my home track. We live about 30 miles from the track, and as far as Kevin, I got to tell you, I can't even imagine it. It had to be heartbreaking, but. He was literally, and this just goes for the people that don't understand, like the sportsmanship and camaraderie. Here this guy led the national championship points all year long, comes down to Vegas, I pass him. The round that I passed him, he was one of the very first people to be at my pits. Hey, man, you did a heck of a job. Congratulations. Like, it was so cool, and I have so much respect for him and the fact that he just walked right over and said good job is a really big deal, and it meant a lot to me. Like, it's just cool that we race with fellow sportsmen that are so, you know, I guess so nice and stand up. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely, that is awesome to hear, and good, you know, and heck of a job on his part too. I mean, it sucks to go number two, but you know, or I mean, I'm assuming that, but maybe it's I won't presume where he finished, but you know, great year. Let's take an opportunity to do a couple of shout outs while I still have you. I'm going to turn you over to John Bachman here in a moment, but do you got anybody you want to say howdy to while we have you on the line?
Well, more shout outs than anything would just be thanks for all the support of both sponsors and individuals that allow Kyle and I to race. You know, we won the two championships, and I guess it's all about us and our family, like our team. You know, my dad's heavily involved, my parents, my wife. But but the biggest thing is, without all the sponsors and all the help with all of the cars, I mean, from Goodyear Tires, Sunoco Fuel, the individual car sponsors, there's Silver State Plumbing on the Cobalt, Redback Boots on the Copo, and Palmer Electric on the Dragster. Those are our main sponsors. And honestly, it takes, I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, everybody looks at like, oh yeah, Kyle and Justin won a couple championships, but the reality is it was like this huge group effort, and without the support of the companies and the individuals, we definitely could not do what we do.
Right, I tell you, it takes some driving up there. You don't out there in the West, you don't just hop a couple 2-3 hours to racetrack like we're lucky enough to do here on the East. Sometimes you gotta,
going
to Woodburn, that's a cruise.
Yeah, and people don't realize. I had this conversation. Can't remember who I was on the phone with recently, and they talked about, like, you know, hey, are you going to chase points? What are you going to do? Blah blah blah. And we were talking about it. I said, man, you don't realize when I go to like the Seattle Divisional, it's like a 25 to 30 hour drive.
Right.
And the person I can't remember who it was, but was like, man, the farthest I drive is like 12 hours. I'm like,
yeah,
man, everywhere we drive is 12 hours. You know, like,
yeah,
that's what it feels like.
You're happy about that, isn't it? Well, I'll tell you what, Justin, man, great season, man. Let's talk a little bit of music here. Let's send you to John Bachman. It just occurred to me, I mentioned John at the beginning of the show. John Bachman obviously doing our rocking part of Racing and Rocking, and our Racer of the Week. But, John, take it away.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thanks, BP. Justin, first of all, I just want to congratulate you on this incredible championship year. To my knowledge, I haven't ever heard of anything like this, man. You just did great. And what we'd like to know is if y'all had a theme song this year behind your championship run, or if you had some music playing in the background or in your head when you went to the track.
You know, I can't think of anything off the top of my head as far as a theme song. Like, you're probably going to laugh, and I'm probably one of the very few that you're going to have on your show that have this, but my genre of music is old rap, like old hip-hop, I guess. And so, you know, I'm going to say 2000 and earlier, you know, like a Biggie Smalls, like old school Mace, you know, things like that. And so, I mean, I had to pick a song that I listen to the most often, or, you know, on the way to the track or in the airport or whatever the case, I'm sure it was some kind of older rap song for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my sons put me hip to Biggie Smalls and Tupac Shakur and some of the hip-hop guys from back around the turn of the century, and they were fantastic, man. I just absolutely loved Biggie Smalls' music.
If you turn on like a modern-day rap radio station, I wouldn't even have a clue. Like, I don't like the new music. It's not my thing. I just doesn't do much for me, but it's the old school rap I really enjoy. And that being said, like, you know, I like all music. Like, my wife and I like to go to concerts. We go to a lot of different concerts. And
yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You know, what was your favorite concert that you went to?
Well, there was the record that like the record label that Biggie Smalls was a part of, and Mace and Lil' Kim and like so many people, was Bad Boy Records, which is I don't even know what his name is now. He's been P. Diddy, Puffy, you name it, but he's the owner. Sean Combs is the owner. Well, they did what they called the Bad Boy Family Reunion, and it came to Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was the middle of last year, and it was basically like everybody from the record label that's still alive came and did this essentially concert. It was nonstop, jam-packed. So many artists that I really liked, all like, you know, let's say 2000 and earlier, you know, 2005 and earlier, and it was a blast. It was definitely the best concert I've been to.
That is great. Yeah, I saw one rapper in concert at Lollapalooza in 91. It was Ice Cube. And he came out, he had a band, and there was 50,000 people there, and we had a blast with that guy. He was fantastic, you know. It's a great genre, a great form of music, and of course he moved into Hollywood. Now he's an actor now and everything, but he still performs. Well, that's great. You know, you're unique. You're one guy that has talked about this style of music, because most of them are in hard rock or country, one or the other, you know.
Here's the thing. I like other things. My wife and I are going to like a Kenny Chesney concert. It's more her thing than mine, but I enjoy it. You know, we're going there, I think it's in a couple months from now. And that being said, you know, like, I don't know. I listen to, like, rock and roll once in a while, things like that. In the shop, I'll tell you, it's mostly either rock and roll or country, because my father's in there, and there's no way he's going to listen to some old school rap. I can promise you that. So, in the shop, it's always rock and country.
But. Yeah, that's for sure. Wow, that's great, man. I'm going to have to go back and listen to some of that again, because I kind of lost touch with it. You know, I play in an oldies band here in town, and then I play in another band that does original material. So, my exposure to current music or music of the millennium has been limited lately. I've just been, been having to play, Unchained Melody and this other kind of stuff, you know, at Christmas shows and so forth. But we're having a good time, man, and that's great information.
That's cool.
Justin.
Absolutely.
There's a guy on a totally side note here, but if you look him up, I'm not sure how you'd find him, but Kyle and I ended up at a bar at Seattle one night. It was a few years ago, but a couple friends of ours, Kyle, myself, a gentleman named Andy Morris, he's a bracket racer from up in Division 6, and Brad Burton, I'm sure you guys maybe even have had on your show, he's won the Stock Limiter World Championship a couple times. Well, the four of us go to this bar at one time, and there's this gentleman there, I'm sure you can just maybe search like Seattle, Washington, and he called himself the One Man Band, and he basically had all these different instruments, and he had like this recording device, so he'd make a beat and then start recording it, and it would just like continually play that beat. Then he'd grab another instrument and play it, and it would start recording that beat and mix it together. This guy would not only do like rock and roll country, he would do like Snoop Dogg songs. So here's this one man band guy up there creating beats and then rapping to it, and he'd go right from rapping to singing Garth Brooks. You know, like,
wow.
It was crazy. It was. I'm sure he's got to be on YouTube. I've never looked it up, but I'm sure he is. And anyways, you'll get a kick out of it. It was really cool.
Well, we're going to look that
up.
Yeah. Well, Justin, you tell us about a one-man band. You were about the one-man gang in 2017 as you nailed down four championships in 1 year, buddy. Congratulations on a great year. Best of luck in 2018, and we got to let you go. Time is running short, but thanks so much for joining us. And congratulations again.
Thank you again, and I appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, Justin Lim, your 2017 NHRA Superstock and Stock Eliminator Champion, plus the same titles in Division I Lucas Oil Drag Racing Series. Fantastic. Let's turn it over to John Bachman for this week's Racer of the Week. John, take it away.
Thanks, BP. I decided to kick off 2018 featuring a vintage dragster from the days of old, and it's one that's close to my heart. My pick for Racer of the Week is Bob Malone, originally from Houston, Texas, and now residing north of town in Navasota, Texas. Bob was recommended to me by our friend, six-time AHRA World Champion and former Racer of the Week, Bobby Knighton. Thanks, Bobby. Bob Malone's A-Fuel Pontiac-powered slingshot dragster, the Pony, is one of the true classics of our sport. It's completely home-built. It is a piece of drag racing history that we are fortunate to still have with us. He takes it around the country and cackles it at nostalgia events from coast to coast, and his restoration is absolutely impeccable. I got my first taste of a cackle fest at the National Hot Rod Reunion in Bowling Green with Draglist in 2016, and I can't wait for another one. Bob has showed up in this area several times recently with the Pony. Now, putting nitromethane into a 1961 Pontiac engine has never been the most popular or advisable thing to do. The risks usually far outweigh the rewards, but Bob Malone proved them wrong. He won with it. He ran the car from the late 50s up through the mid-60s in Division 4, winning 4 championships and setting track speed records all over Texas, notably a 183 at Alamo Raceway in San Antonio. He raced both AHRA and NHRA events, and more often than not, Bob ended up in the winner's circle with his dragster. After he decided to pull the car over, he got a job driving a milk truck, which over the next few years he parlayed that job into owning 9 tank trucks that he services and drives as his own trucking company in Navasota. Every so often he gets out and displays the pony, and I look forward to meeting him in person soon. Bobby Knighton and Bob are still good friends. Both are in their 80s now, and I expect that Bobby will convince him to bring the pony to the weekly Hot Rod Show here in Stafford soon. I am blessed to have these gents as friends. They are the genuine article. Bob Malone, thank you for preserving this outstanding dragster for us to enjoy. We wish you good luck, safe racing, and the best of times in the future. Back to you, BP.
All right, thank you, John. JB's take, folks, as always, it's awesome. Let's wrap this guy up here in a moment. First of all, I want to tell you a couple things going on. We just announced today a Weekend Warrior Luncheon at the Eastern Museum of Motor Racing is going to happen on Saturday, February 10th. So come on up there and bench race with us. Also, as is our sad duty, we will mention our lost friends tonight. It's been long, 2 weeks we've been off the air, so this is a long list, unfortunately. But on the 20th of December, we lost Joe Hendricks, AA Fuel Altered Racer. On the 20th also, Barry Dodson, a friend to Racers Reunion and Radio crew chief for Raymond Beadle's NASCAR team. Also on the 20th, Jerry Ball. On the 21st of December, Gary Tampa, Michigan Superstock racer, passed away. On the also in December, Jerry Vignona, a Division I Stock Eliminator racer, and Ed Prout, a Division I Comp Eliminator racer, famous for his AA Bantam Roadster in recent years, but one of the early pro stock stalwarts with a Maverick back in the 70s, Ed Prout. On the 1st of January, folks, we lost Ray Godman, the Tennessee Boll Weevil. We've had Ray on the show, one of the great, great drag racers in Funny Car and just fuel racers over the years.
Yes, he
farewell
was.
To him. On the 5th, just recently, Joe Sway Jr. Joe Sway was the promoter and owner at Atco Dragway, also a former pro stock racer back in the 80s. I know Joe very well. He used to run at Bud's Creek all the time, and if you go back in your National Dragsters, you'll see Joe Sway back there, you know, knocking heads with Bob Glidden and Lee Shepard and all the rest. So Joe Sway Sr., farewell to you, sir. And then on the 7th, we just lost this gentleman yesterday, Jack Merkel, one of the great early gasser racers from the Northeast. You can find him all over drag list, all over drag racing history. Jack Merkel, one of the great door slammer racers of all time. Jack, farewell to you, sir. And our condolences to all the family and friends, of course. And thanks for the thrills to all these great guys. Let's wrap it up, folks. I do want to thank Justin Lamb, who just had an amazing year in 2017. John Bachman, of course. Danny White, Jeff and Dustin Gilder, Barb Santucci, and Bud, Mr. Drag News DeBoer. Next week, we'll be talking with 2017 NHRA Top Alcohol Funny Car Champion Shane Westerfield. See you then, folks. Have a great week. Bye-bye.